Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. May was a good month for the markets, but there are many questions that advisors are asking as we enter June, such as the fate of tariffs, the outcome of trade negotiations, the status of the One Big Beautiful Bill, and what impact the tariffs will have on the economy. Here to discuss these and other questions and what they mean for the market outlook is Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation Americas. Jason, let's get started. Let's begin with the markets. How do you assess recent performance?
Well, it was a good month in May. The S&P 500 was up 6.15% after a very tumultuous April. And now it's in positive territory for the year, marginally so, but at 0.5%. So it's almost as if, you know, that we kind of reset kind of the start of the year, like being flat as we head into the summer. But the good month for May is a little bit, I wouldn't say misleading, but there's nuance to the story. The bulk of that performance happened in the first 12 days. There was the announcement back on, May 11th of a U.S.-China sort of tariff reprieve where the tariff rates would come lower on the following Monday, the 12th. The markets rallied strongly on that news. Since that day, the markets across different asset classes have been relatively, you know, calm, you know, trading in sort of relatively narrow ranges. And to give you some perspective, the S&P 500 has been between 5,800 and 6,000 during that time period, the last 3 weeks. Last Friday, the last day of May, it was down 0.01%, so effectively unchanged for that day. That was the fourth day in the past 3 weeks in which the absolute return for the S&P 500 was less than 0.1% or 1.1% or smaller. So very small changes on four of those days. Prior to May 12th, for the entire calendar year of like a little over almost 4.5 months, there's only six such days. So again, a six suggesting the markets are moving relatively, you know, small amounts. That's reflected in VIX, which has been mostly between 18 and 20, you know, so coming down to more kind of reasonable levels. This is also evident in other asset classes. The 10-year treasury yield has been between like 4.4% and 4.6%, the two-year yield between 3.9% and 4.05%. Market pricing for the number of Fed rate cuts this year by December has, you know, been pretty closely stayed around at two cuts this year. The dollar sort of, you know, kind of fluctuated, you know, in a relatively narrow range. So overall, kind of relative calm as the market sort of digested sort of these, you know, tariff kind of reprieves. And so I think that is kind of how we enter March is, or how we enter June. You know, good recent performance, but it's sort of indicative of investors kind of assessing, like, you know, what's coming next at this point in time as the market's been in relatively narrow ranges in recent weeks.
So, Jason, moving on to tariffs, the Court of International Trade struck down the IEEPA-imposed tariffs, but the Court of Appeals granted a temporary stay, allowing them to remain in place. Given that, what do you expect will happen with tariffs, and what does this mean for trade negotiations?
Well, it certainly throws a bit of a curveball into the whole, you know, tariff developments. You know, the markets have been assuming after that U.S.-China tariff reprieve, a deal with the U.K., that we are inching towards more deals and more sort of, you know, confidence that the tariff rates would not rise significantly. This kind of throws a little bit of uncertainty into it. And since then, we've also seen a bit of re-escalation of the U.S.-China trade tensions with the current administration, the Trump administration, looking to increase, you know, more restrictions on technology accessible to Chinese companies. And then also on Friday, President Trump announced a 50% tariff on steel and aluminum imports as effective as of June 4th. So it's kind of a reminder that this tariff story is certainly not over by any stretch. But given a lot of all this sort of noise, I guess, you know, where do we kind of come out of it? Ultimately, I'd say that the endpoint for tariffs is not going to be that much different than it was, say, a week ago before these developments. But the path to getting there is going to be a little bit different and potentially more elongated, therefore adding uncertainty of how this will all play out. Now, when I say sort of endpoint for tariffs, what I really mean is the effective tariff rate that would be applied to goods. And this is just simply, if you take the amount that's imported in the U.S., the amount of customs duty that has to be paid for those imports, take that as a percentage, you know, we think of that as the effective tariff rate. And it's somewhere in the mid-teens, around, you know, 13-15% is sort of what we're, you know, assuming, whereas 10% or lower would be a bull case and 20% or thereabouts or high would be kind of a bear case kind of outcome. The Court of International Trade struck down tariffs that were imposed using IEEPA, which is sort of an emergency act provision. And their claim would be that, well, there wasn't clearly an emergency that justifies the tariffs on all countries, on those fentanyl tariffs that were applied to Canada, Mexico, and China, you're back in in the winter. So that's the ruling. This could ultimately kind of go to the Supreme Court, and that will take some time to decide. There are other means and legal measures the administration can use to impose tariffs, but that sort of biases towards more sector-specific tariffs. You can impose tariffs if there's an investigation that's proving there's been harm done to U.S. sectors, unfair competitive advantages imposed by the countries, and that's likely what the administration will do. So perhaps less or a little bit lower broad-based tariffs across the board, but higher tariffs on specific assets or specific goods. And the end result in terms of the effective tariff rate again should still be in the mid-teens range. At least that's kind of what we'd be assuming. But this will take sort of more time because sector-specific tariffs require investigations that can take, at least a few months, if not longer. So that sort of pushes us further into summer. It could also mean that you have, what the court challenges, uncertainty of when things would sort of be resolved to give the administration guidance of what path they're more likely to want to take. And then for other countries looking at all this, this does perhaps create an incentive for them to want to not negotiate, to see how the court system plays out, to see what the sector-specific investigations kind of deal with. So if anything, there's probably some bias towards not wanting to offer sort of concessions at this point in time, just because they don't know what's going to come out. But it's also clear that at different points in time, President Trump is willing to offer reprieves because of avoiding potentially the cost to the financial markets or the economy of higher tariffs. So again, a reason for negotiations to take a little bit longer. So I think really what it means is, well, the court ruling is a kind of incrementally sort of positive direction in terms of the level of tariffs that could ultimately be imposed. I think the net result is perhaps more uncertainty than investors were assuming just from a few weeks ago. More time for this all to be kind of resolved. But the end result is probably similar to where we were before.
Turning to the economy, activity seems to be holding up while sentiment has improved. What is your read on the economic outlook?
Well, it certainly was the case in April that sentiment was deteriorated quite rapidly for investors, but also consumers, responding to the higher tariffs and the potential increase in costs, the negative impact on the economy. The actual economic data was holding up relatively well, in part because in the anticipation of tariffs, there was kind of front running by consumers to buy goods before the prices potentially go up. Likewise, with companies importing goods before the tariffs would be in place. So the data we've gotten thus far shows a decent amount of resiliency and actual kind of hard economic activity, including sort of labor market kind of activity overall. It was a soft data, sentiment data that was relatively weak. What we've seen now, because of these tariff reprieves, the soft data, the sentiment has started to improve, from a low level, but it's sort of converging back towards, at least a little towards the hard data as consumers become a little bit more optimistic. What we have seen thus far, though, in the data is kind of a little bit hard to interpret. It's relatively noisy. We did get a revision for Q1 GDP numbers last week, slightly better than expected. Instead of minus 0.03%, it was minus 0.02%. But then we look at what is sort of the tracking estimate for the second quarter of GDP. The Atlanta Fed tracking estimate, which is widely followed, is now up to 3.8%. So this is clear. Q1 is not as bad as that first number appeared. Q3, Q2 is not going to necessarily be as strong as the tracking estimate indicates because it's being distorted by imports that are and net imports and net exports that are swinging wildly in response to these tariffs. A better indication is kind of real domestic final sales. That was 2% in Q1. It's likely going to be a lot less than that, maybe only 1% in Q2. So certainly weighing on consumer spending. But we need more data to assess that. We get a lot of data this week from the payrolls report on Friday to the ISM manufacturing surveys, JOLTS data, other labor market data. That will give a better indication of the status of the economy. But our expectation is, I think the market expectation is that the tariff impact will still be not fully evident for at least a couple of more months. First, you need to see companies raising their prices, passing along those price increases. That may be evident in May, but more likely to start to appear in June and July. As those go up, it does impact kind of real income, spending power declines. That's going to affect consumer spending. That will affect the labor market. And so this is still to become in terms of the consequence of the data. But the story right now has been a relatively resilient economy and certainly not yet signs of the tariffs having a major impact, but that's more likely to kind of come down the pipeline. But it does mean, given that we haven't yet seen that rollover in the data, it's probably also one of the reasons why the financial market's been able to hold relatively steady, and it's certainly risk assets to be able to kind of bounce back because we haven't seen yet clear weaknesses.
What do these policies and economic developments mean for the market outlook?
Well, I go back to my comments about the markets for the past few weeks being in a sort of relatively tight kind of trading range. You know, the way I sort of interpret this is that investors are kind of standing pat. They're waiting for news to see a clear inflection point in the outlook, either positively or negatively. You know, things are going to be better than expected because there's trade deals, or worse because they're not going to be in place and the economic conditions are kind of rolling over. I think we need to see some kind of, you know, news, sort of new news for the markets to kind of break out of these ranges. And an overall kind of aggregate assessment of investor positioning data through a number of different metrics would suggest that it's somewhat neutral, you know, after being, you know, relatively pessimistic and more cautious, you know, after Liberation Day, and certainly more risk on, sort of positive risk positioning back early in the start of the year, relatively neutral. Again, consistent with investors, not quite sure yet exactly what the direction of travel is for the economic news, for the policy news, and therefore the markets, you know, overall. I think relative to what's pricing across asset classes, which I'd say is priced for kind of slower growth, but certainly not a recession, I think the risks are probably skewed a little more toward the negative inflection point. And in terms, just because there's still a lot of uncertainty in terms of what could happen with trade deals, tariffs. We haven't seen yet the economic data really been impacted, and that certainly could materialize. And then the one big beautiful bill, I think the markets have, you know, looked at the recent developments and thinking that could be incrementally positive for the growth outlook for next year relative to earlier expectations. Whether that still holds pat, you know, or whether that leads to higher rates or not, that is certainly something that could kind of weigh on the markets, you know, to some extent. But I really want to emphasize that I think we need to see sort of new news to break out of these recent ranges. You know, the so-called sort of taco trade that has been, you know, been talked about in the markets, but also in the broader public, of which is short for Trump always chickens out, meaning on tariffs, that he announces big tariffs, a sign of weakness, he walks them back. He certainly, you know, Trump pushed back on that when asked by a reporter last week. But I think the idea that investors are kind of skeptical that high levels of tariffs will stay in place because of the economic pain, I think that's going to be the view of investors until they really see some sustained follow through and real impact on the economy. Otherwise, any announcement of higher tariffs or, you know, different, you know, trade issues, I think the markets will kind of shrug their shoulders a little bit. We have seen, we've seen this story before. Until we see the negative implications, we're not going to react. Another story dominating the markets throughout May was the rise in rates, especially at the, you know, the long end of the curve, like the 30-year point going higher. But to really kind of break out of the range, in the 10-year in particular, for, you know, to break out of the range of 4.4, 4.6%, and on the upside going higher, we need to see, you know, growth and or inflation data really surprising to the upside in significant ways, you know, or something on the fiscal front where the deficit will be even bigger as a result of what passes, you know, through the Senate ultimately kind of becomes law. Otherwise, a lot of this information, like large deficits going forward, you know, relatively maybe higher inflation because of the tariffs, this is sort of known, this is priced in. So we need something more to kind of move the market significantly higher, for rates to go significantly higher. And unless that, and if that doesn't happen, then again, that removes a potential headwind for risk assets, at least in the near term. So for when we think about, is summer is essentially here, it's likely we'll see some inflection points and sort of, you know, shifting narratives in the marketplace that could break us out of these ranges. What happens and how it plays out really kind of depends on the sequencing of when different types of news come forward. So don't be surprised if we see some one or two sort of pivots in the market in terms of what is the narrative. That happened last summer, where early July of 2024, things look kind of relatively Goldilocks. Then the market's worried about growth, and we saw a significant sell-off after a weak, you know, July jobs report. Then things balanced back, you know, relatively quickly. We could see something along those lines, this summer as well. I think the most important thing is that on a medium-term horizon, ultimately some of these shorter-term inflections and news flows, you know, don't really matter. It's more about what is the fundamental story for the next 12 months. And there we're at least a little bit more constructive in terms of, you know, how the tariff story would play out. What does it mean for the economy? A slowdown, not a recession, and ultimately macro conditions that are generally supportive for risk assets on a 12-month horizon.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Jason. Based on all of this, what should investors be doing?
Well, I'll pick up on my last comment about sort of, you know, more constructive on a medium-term 12-month horizon. You know, one of the key messages we have right now, sort of to phase into equities, you know, to be fully invested, but to be looking to add exposure on sort of, you know, decent pullbacks, probably something below that 5,800 range, because at that point in time, we still think there's decent upside. And if you go below 5,800 with a price target that we have for the S&P of 6,400 for next June, that would imply more than a 10% kind of total return. So those would be levels that would become opportunistic to phase into equities. In terms of what we like within equities, you know, tech still remains an attractive sector. We've seen, you know, in the past month, a couple of months, that the Mag 7 and some of the Mag 7 have bounced back, you know, reasonably well, including NVIDIA. And this is reflective of the belief that we have that spending on AI will remain largely intact. And tech specifically also has a kind of high quality bias and should show hold up better, even if the economy a little bit slows. And these sort of secular trends are also evident for the communication services sector, which is dominated by, you know, Meta or Facebook and Alphabet, you know, Google, through both their investment and benefits from AI, but also digital advertising trends. As a bit of a hedge, utilities is a sector that we like. It's defensive, you know, and if the economy does slow, there's potential for upside, especially because there's strong AI power demand. Yeah, if we look outside of the U.S., a couple of things we like are the China tech sector, for those who are kind of want to play the AI theme a little bit more globally. And then there's a lot of ways in Europe to kind of, you know, be positioned aside from, you know, having the exposure to the, you know, the tariff situation overall. Within fixed income, while rates could stay sort of somewhat range bound, the risk certainly is for the longer than the curve for rates to kind of go higher. We don't think at this point in time it's kind of worth taking that risk. So we continue to sort of recommend more, you know, maturity is up to about the 5-year kind of maturity category, you know, point. It's staying up in quality, not needing to take a lot of risk, because as the markets come back again, spreads have tightened again and not offering a lot of compensation for taking, you know, risk overall. So higher quality fixed income like mortgage-backed securities, you know, treasuries, high quality investment grade bonds. And finally, gold has been a good portfolio hedge. It's, you know, chopped around recently, but it's even up, you know, on Monday morning. So again, as a diversifier portfolio, so there's a lot of uncertainty. It's been a relatively effective hedge, and we think that will continue going forward. So definitely a few things for investors to kind of think about and position for as we go into the summer. Markets are relatively calm at the moment, but that is unlikely to last, you know, throughout the entire summer. Something, whether it's trade-related, fiscal policy-related, economic data surprises, that will move the markets positively or negatively one way or another. And it's more likely, you think, to probably be negative before it becomes positive again.
Okay, perfect. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Have a great week, Sean.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.